Welcome back to another edition of the Wobcast. I'm your host, Mike Wobshaw, a replacement producer, kind of like the replacement officials. Earlier this year, we have a replacement producer joining us, Alan Wertheimer. And our guest today is John Sullivan. We're going to bring him right in to kick off this week's edition of the Wobcast. Hi, John.
How's it going?
Good. After a few extra days of practice and digesting that loss, and now we're through this week of practice, are you crabby right now?
Am I crabby?
Yeah.
No, I'm good.
Okay, you're in a
good
mood?
I'm ready to roll for Seattle, yeah.
Okay, cool. How do you think we're going to do?
I expect us to go out and execute well. We expect to win the game.
Yep.
Obviously, we've had a little hiccup recently, but that's okay. You know, we came out, like you said, we had a great week of practice this week. Things were incredibly physical yesterday on Thursday, and, I think we're ready to go.
Is that a delicate balance a team has to draw in practice? I mean, you want to be up-tempo and physical, right, to prepare yourself for the game, but your teammates, and you don't want to beat each other up in practice.
Yeah, I mean, you have to practice smart. So, you can put a guy in a compromised position. Say you get a defensive tackle. From my perspective, you get a defensive tackle rolling, and you think you can finish him. A lot of times when you put somebody on the ground, it's because they trip over someone's legs. So you never finish guys in practice. You don't want to roll somebody up, get an ankle or a knee injured. Even a minor injury, you have to practice like professionals. You have to be respectful, but at the same time, you still have to be physical and get your work in.
Yeah. And taking care of yourselves too, after practice. Is that why, I mean, you guys in hot tub and cold tub and the steam room and the training room, right?
Yeah. I don't do too much of that stuff. I just go home and sit on the couch
and relax.
Yeah, exactly. Get your feet up in the air.
All right. So on a Friday, after today's practice, and we travel tomorrow,
yeah.
What does John Sullivan do to go home and relax? What's a relaxing Friday evening, the PG-rated version of it, the season?
I'll go home today. I'll probably watch TV for a little while, just hang out with my girlfriend and my dogs. And then, I'll have a quiet dinner at the house. I'll read a little bit before bed and then, try to get to sleep. I'm kind of a night owl. It's funny. I'm more tired usually around 8 p.m. than I am around midnight. I like to make the days last a long time, especially once practice is over. So, if I can be asleep by, midnight or 1 a.m, that's a good night for me.
It's because during the day you're so wrapped up and you don't get to do things you want to do. You're doing things you should do.
Exactly, yeah. And, I know where you're coming from. It's like for me on game days. I love game day. I love going out winning football games. But I have so much adrenaline and it's the furthest point. It's the time of the day and time of the week when all the pressure is off. So you want to maximize how long that moment lasts. So I'm up till 4 or 5 in the morning after games. Because I'm trying to make, post game on game day last as long as possible. Yeah. It's the best time of the week. It's the time where you feel the least amount of pressure.
Yeah. Except after losses, I just want to go home and go to sleep after.
Yeah, I still stay up.
Really?
Yeah, I can't help it. Obviously we as players, we hate losing. Trust me, we hate it more than anybody else.
Oh, yeah.
But at the same time, we don't get too low after them, just like you don't get too high after you win. And, the post-game routine is pretty similar.
And I think, for that, that's the key, I think, for players and coaches, and I'll even say for staff members, is after wins, it's not as good as you think. After losses, it's maybe not as bad as you think.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're invested in it for only part of your day or for Sundays for 3 hours, you can be a prisoner of the moment and react however you want to react. But when it's every day for the whole season, you kind of have to keep yourself a little even keel.
Exactly.
You
have to stay on the even keel and you just have to be able to roll with things. I mean, it's the NFL. I think people would assume you'd feel better if you played well and you lost a close game than if you played like crap and you lose a lopsided game. But really, they count the same.
Right.
It's still a loss on your record. It's very, very difficult to go undefeated in the NFL. So losses are going to happen. Obviously, you don't want them to happen, but you have to be able to, just be very sensible about it and say, okay, this is why we lost. I know we're going in tomorrow. We're going to watch the tape. We're going to, work out the problems. If there's some problem that you can't fix, then you're in a lot of trouble. But when all your mistakes are correctable and you can pinpoint the reasons, okay, we lost specifically because of this, we're going to go out on Wednesday, we're going to correct it, and we're going to play better next week, you just have to stay on an even keel, like you said, and, be sensible.
When we haven't been able to move the ball through the air, why have we still been able to rush the ball so well? Because, you have – you're leading an offensive line that is blocking for the NFL's leading rusher. And I would imagine I don't sit there and count the box every single play, but I'm guessing you've got seven or eight guys up there most of the time. So why are you guys still able to run it?
I think the main reason is because we're committed to the run game. And that's, you know, that comes from the coaching staff on down. I mean, obviously, as offensive linemen, we love run blocking, especially when you have a back like Adrian Peterson, who's the best in the game. Mm-hmm. We're committed to it. We know it's a part of our identity. We want to be physical. We want to be smart. And, you know, we want to force teams to have to put that extra man in the box. And, you know, that's why the rushing attack has been successful. We need to do a better job across the board as an offense, you know, allowing the rushing game to set up our passing attack.
Okay. And how do you think that happens? Through play action, or do they back off? Do they put six in the box instead of seven? I mean, how?
Well, we're never going to see a six-man box, not with the way that we run the football. Okay. I don't know exactly how it happens. I think it's, like I said before, I don't think it's too difficult to pinpoint just one issue.
Yeah.
It comes down to, you know, you have to make a blanket statement about it. It just has to be better execution across the board at every single position.
Yeah. You said, let's get into yourself off the field. You said you have two dogs.
I do.
So tell us about them, man.
I have two dogs that I rescued when I got out here. I have a 9 years old now? I have a 9-year-old Rottweiler named mm-hmm. Izzy, who I got from a place out in Madison, Minnesota called Gemini Rottweiler and Pitbull Rescue.
Okay.
And my girlfriend and I were talking about getting another dog at this time of year, but in 2013. And the woman who runs the rescue group that we got Izzy from posted on Facebook that she had a 3-year-old purebred Doberman that was coming up for adoption. So I told my girlfriend, hey, give Jen a call and, you know, let her know we may be interested. Jen was kind enough. Her name's Jen Wold, by the way. If you need to adopt a dog, definitely check out Gemini.
Okay.
But Jen and her husband, Mike, were kind enough to drive Rex out so we could meet him while I was back for a day during training camp. And then we took him 2 weeks after we met him, and that was the day after the Buffalo game in the preseason.
Cool.
So we've had Rex now for, you know, 2-3 months.
Rex. And what was your other dog's name?
Izzy.
Oh, yeah. Rex and Izzy. I mean, they need a buddy, right? They need a companion. Or they don't need it, but
yeah,
I think it's better with two.
You know, what's funny is it's great with two. We originally, Izzy was pretty dog aggressive, and we were kind of forced to deal with that when we moved in with Kyle Rudolph and his girlfriend, Jordan.
Yeah.
This past year when my girlfriend and I were renovating a house that we bought. So Izzy learned to get along with their bulldog, Charlie. So at that point, we knew, okay. This is a dog that's...
And buddy him up.
Yeah, we're able to, you know, introduce another dog.
Cool.
Yeah.
And you and the Notre Dame guys, man, you must be having a lot of fun in the locker room.
It's been great, yeah. It's nice to be able to talk trash to pretty much everybody.
Yeah.
Hopefully they keep winning. You know, Pitt this weekend always plays Notre Dame tough. So, you know, you can't take any of them for granted. But, you know, Rudy and I and Phil... We were fortunate enough to be able to go down to the Oklahoma Notre Dame game last week. Yeah, we all watched it from the sidelines,
awesome.
Opposing sidelines, but we were able to watch it. We talked a lot of trash to Phil on the flight home. It was great.
And Phil went with you guys?
Phil went with us.
Oh my gosh.
Although we did not watch the game together, he was on OU's sideline. We were on Notre Dame.
Okay. I mean, like in Minnesota, when you grow up in Minnesota, you grew up out east in
mm-hmm.
Connecticut.
Yep.
But I mean, when you grow up in Minnesota, no disrespect to the Gophers, but they're not. I mean, you watch them and you root for them, but they're not. You know, they're not very good very often. So, like, you naturally attach yourself to another team, and Notre Dame's on TV all the time.
Yeah.
So I think in the Midwest, even though Notre Dame has that New York Yankees, Los Angeles Lakers, love them or hate them, like,
mm-hmm.
like more people love them than any other team, and more people hate them than any other team.
Yeah.
So even though you have that to it, I think in the Midwest and in Minnesota, you have more Notre Dame fans than most areas, I feel like.
Yeah,
do
I
you
mean,
think so?
Well, I'm not 100% sure. I haven't been in Minnesota that long. I do feel like there is national support. It does seem like that. And, you know, the other thing is we get a ton of guys from this area that come to Notre Dame.
Okay.
While I was there, I think I had 4 or 5 teammates from Creighton-Durham Hall alone, along
mm-hmm.
with, you know, Carlson being from Litchfield, Trevor Laws, who was from Burnsville, played at Apple Valley.
Mm-hmm.
There were a few other guys. I think a guy named Joey Hyben came out there.
Okay.
I want to say he was from Waconia, but I don't know that for sure.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, we had a ton of Minnesota guys that made their way down to South Bend.
I mean, and for if people don't think that you guys talk about your alma maters in the locker room, I mean, you guys do. I mean, it's especially on Fridays.
Yeah,
we
didn't talk too much for the past few years about Notre Dame, but, you know, when you're 8-0 and you just went out and beat Oklahoma, you know, at OU by 17 points. Yeah, you've got a little bit of firepower there.
Let's get controversial here, since we can't normally do that about Vikings things or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, let's do it about college football. Playoff.
Yeah. Do you think they should have a playoff? Do you like the BCS?
Well, there is a playoff system coming, right?
2014, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that'll be great. I mean, I don't know what it would hurt to have the playoff system, so I think it's definitely the right way to go about it. You look at the success of March Madness, college basketball, the excitement that surrounds that. And obviously you see it in college football, I think, at the Division II and Division III levels. So obviously the model works. And, you know, I think that'll be a huge deal. It'll make people feel like the championship of college football is, you know, Division I college football is more legitimate.
Yeah,
and that's
definitely
always a good thing.
Yeah. You were at Amplatz Children's Hospital this week, right?
I was,
on Tuesday.
Yep.
What was going on there?
We unveiled renderings of a new playground that is going to be built there. A few teammates joined me, and we hosted a Halloween huddle.
Cool.
Which is a holiday party that we put on for the families that are at Amplatz. We'll do those three times a year, Halloween, Thanksgiving,
cool,
and Christmas.
And it was, you know, yourself kind of leading the way, and then Chad Greenway's organization too, and the Vikings joined in, right?
Yeah, kind of. I approached, I had spoken with some people at Amplatz about the opportunity to sponsor the playground, and, you know, came up with a level of a donation that I could do, and we were a little bit short, so I reached out to Chad, and Chad and his wife Jenny and the Lead the Way Foundation were incredibly generous. And then the Minnesota Vikings matched them to complete the project. So I can't thank those two groups enough. That support's incredible. The playground is something that I've been told they really need over at Amplatz. It'll give the kids that are, you know, in the hospital there and their siblings, families that are dealing with, you know, pediatric illness, an outlet to get outside and, you know, add a little bit of normalcy back into a kid's life.
The Vikings do a good job of touching different parts of the community. The Children's Hospital is a big one, and that's kind of one that, if I remember right, you've always kind of gone to visits and done the Children's Hospital thing, right?
Yeah,
that's kind of been your...
Since I arrived here in 2008, I've gone to, I think, every visit, but, you know, there could have been one that I missed.
Yeah.
But at that point, it was being hosted by Stephen Landon Hutchinson.
Okay.
So they were the sponsors of the event. When Steve moved on to Tennessee, he was honored this past year at the Amplatz Wine Fest, which is a benefit dinner for Amplatz Children's Hospital. And Steve asked me if I would take over and host these visits. Now that he had moved on, he felt that it was important for a current Vikings player to do it.
Cool.
And, you know, he was a great role model for, you know, giving back, and especially in that mode to the Children's Hospital. So, you know, I'm just trying to, you know, step into those shoes and, you know, continue what he was doing.
Cool. All right, man. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Mike.
Go have a relaxing Friday before we travel,
Yeah,
huh?
I will. You
All right.
too.
See ya.
See ya.
One last thing before we let you go. I have three reasons the Vikings are going to be able to beat Seattle this weekend. One offense, one defense, one special teams. Let's go over them. Offense first. I think Christian Ponder and Bill Musgrave are going to find a way to get Kyle Rudolph involved in this game. He has just two catches over the past two games. I expect Rudy to be much more involved. And I think it's going to be in the middle of the field against this defense. They're strong on the edges. They have good defensive ends. Chris Clemens has 8 sacks. Bruce Irvin has 4 sacks and a forced fumble. Their cornerbacks are big and physical. I think the place to attack this Seattle defense is over the middle. It's not that they're soft in the middle or poor players in the middle of the field. It's just that's where I feel the Vikings have the best chance to be productive. So find Kyle Rudolph in the middle of the field. Number two, defensively, you have to make Russell Wilson, their rookie quarterback, throw the ball to beat you. You do not want to let superstar running back Marshawn Lynch beat you. Russell Wilson, it's not that he can't pass. It's just that Seattle would prefer to lean on Lynch. Russell Wilson has thrown 30 passes or more in a game just twice this year. They lost both games. So if you can somewhat neutralize or contain Marshawn Lynch and make Russell Wilson throw it, I think you're going to have a better chance to win. Third on special teams, it's Percy Harvin time, folks. Percy Harvin is going to have opportunities to return kickoffs in Seattle. You remember in our last game against Tampa Bay, he didn't have very many opportunities. This Seattle special teams group takes pride in covering kicks. They have touchbacks just 51% of the time on their kickoffs, but they're number 4 in opponents' drive start average. It's at the 19.4 yard line. That's really good. And they're number 1 in opponents' kickoff return average. They're very good covering kicks, so Percy's going to have a challenge. Of course, Percy's number 2 in the NFL in kickoff return average at 35.7, so that's a really good matchup. Percy Harvin against this kickoff coverage group of Seattle, that'll be a fun one to watch. I think Percy's going to get a chance to return some kicks, and I think he's going to be productive. That'll do it for us today. We leave you with a hit from Perry Como. Take it away.
The bluest skies you've ever seen are in Seattle. And the hills, the greenest green in Seattle. Like a beautiful child growing up free and wild. Full of hopes and full of fears. Full of laughter, full of tears. Full of dreams to last the years.